Good morning. So today we're continuing in a series that, well, we started a while back, but right now we're in a moment thinking about the kingdom of heaven. And as you'll recall, right, this is an outgrowth of sort of a longer thing, thinking about our relationship to this idea of government or of kingdoms and so on. So we spent a lot of time looking at sort of Old Testament teachings about this idea of kingdoms and how we might relate to government. And then last week, Mark morphed us into thinking, you know, about this idea of what is this kingdom of heaven all about? And we're using Matthew to sort of think this through, because Matthew, it turns out, talks a lot about the idea of the kingdom of heaven. And today we get to Matthew chapter 5. And Matthew chapter 5 is a really interesting moment to think about for a second about the structure of Matthew. Matthew chapter 5 is the beginning of what we call the Sermon on the Mount. It's this long sermon in Matthew. It also comes as this really interesting moment if you watch the development of Matthew's gospel, right? So Matthew's gospel starts with the famous birth stories of Jesus. But then it's sort of Jesus ends up down in Egypt, and then he comes out of Egypt, right? So here we have Jesus coming out of Egypt, and then immediately thereafter, there's this scene of going through water, this baptism. And then immediately after that, he goes out into this wilderness, and he's tempted by the devil. And then in chapter 5, what does he do? Lo and behold, he goes up on a mountain. And if you're sort of reading Matthew, it's fairly obvious what Matthew is doing here. He is replicating the story of Exodus here for us. That Jesus is sort of coming out of Egypt, going through the water, going into the wilderness, and now he goes up onto a mountain. And what happened in Exodus when Moses went up on a mountain? Well, that's when we got the Ten Commandments and the law being handed down. So Matthew has clearly set this up so that when we get to chapter 5 and we realize, wow, here's Jesus on this mountain and he's about to start talking, this must be really important. It's coming very early in the story, and here is the message that Jesus is going to deliver. And so we get to Matthew chapter 5, and it starts this way, right? So Matthew chapter 5. Seeing the crowds, he went up on the mountain, and when he sat down, his disciples came to him. And he opened his mouth and taught them, saying. And right now, if you're imagining you're reading this for the first time, you are waiting eagerly to hear, what is he going to say? Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. And we'll pause there and note, if you are hearing this, you have no idea what Jesus is talking about. I mean, you're sitting here reading this thing and you're thinking, here's going to be the moment. The Ten Commandments, they were crisp. I mean, you can read the Ten Commandments. You know exactly what the Ten, do not murder, right? It's not hard to sort of interpret this sort of thing, right? But here's Jesus, and he starts off with all of these, just blessed are these people, for they'll do this. And you look at it, and it is so inherently contradictory in this complete mess. Blessed are those who mourn. I mean, this is not who we normally think of as the blessed people, right? And blessed are those who mourn because they're going to be comforted. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are the sort of the people who are persecuted. And then you get these weird juxtapositions, right? Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they'll be satisfied. So is it good to hunger and thirst, or is it good to be satisfied? And you start doing this, and you realize pretty quickly, if you're listening to this, you have no idea what's going on. This literally makes no sense. And so our instinct is to dig down and say, okay, let's study the Beatitudes now, right? And you see this in churches all the time, right? You're in a Bible study, or you're in a sermon, you get the Beatitudes, and you say, okay, let's examine the Beatitudes. And it turns out this is one of the problems we run into in church settings nowadays, is we see the Beatitudes as this distinct little unit. And one of the reasons we see them as a distinct unit is because in almost every Bible you buy right now, they've got all the little breakpoints in the thing, right? So the Sermon on the Mount has an endless number of little breakpoints in it. And what it looks like is it looks like, I don't know, a couple dozen different little sermons or Bible study things. And we pick up one of them and we sit down and we study it. We try to figure out what this little part means. But it turns out when Jesus is giving the Sermon on the Mount, or when Matthew is constructing this and writing this down, right? He's not doing it with all those little section breaks. It's actually one long cohesive sermon. Now, the problem with this is we all know, if you were to sit down and just preach the Sermon on the Mount. Like, imagine if I just got up here and just read the thing. It's really long, and if it's really long, our attention spans, and it's sort of, you know, just sort of like that. I mean, it would take a whopping 10 minutes to read this thing through, and who has a 10-minute attention span, right? I mean, we can't expect to read this whole thing straight through, right? And then you think about, well, I'm going to talk for like a half an hour, and so I already know right away, if Jesus' Sermon on the Mount is too long for the normal attention span, I got no hope here. So when you tune out, I understand. And so we sort of have this interesting problem here with the Sermon on the Mount, is by breaking it up and looking at all the little sections, we often miss that the little sections did not stand alone. It would be like taking a sermon and ripping out a 5-minute part of it and saying, okay, let's study this little thing. And you say, but wait a minute, no. It was all one cohesive thing. It all meant to go together. And so when we look at this story here, we see these Beatitudes. They're confusing, they're bewildering. It has this weird notion structure about this kingdom of heaven. And this is the reason we can notice it today, is talking about the kingdom of heaven. The first beatitude is, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. The last of the ones with this structure, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. It's like these bookends about the kingdom of heaven. And with the bookends, maybe we start thinking, maybe this isn't like a whole bunch of separate little beatitudes. Maybe it all goes together somehow. But how? And we could study this and stare at it forever, and we would miss how it goes together unless we keep reading. So let's keep reading. So right after the passage I read, you are the salt of the earth. But if the salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. For truly I say to you, until heaven and earth pass away, not an iota, not a dot, will pass from the law until all is accomplished. Therefore, whoever relaxes one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does them and teaches them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. And there again, we suddenly see the kingdom of heaven just showing right back up. It's almost like Jesus mentions it early, and then he goes on and he brings back this idea of the kingdom of heaven. And when we look at what he's saying about the kingdom of heaven here, well, we'll start with verse 19. Therefore, whoever relaxes one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does them and teaches them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. That is perfectly understandable. You imagine sitting down listening to that, and you'd say that is exactly what you would expect to hear about the kingdom of heaven. We have a kingdom of heaven up there. How do you get into the kingdom of heaven? How do you get to be great in the kingdom of heaven? Well, you do all the right things, right? You act well, you follow the law, you go to church, you build big churches, you go, and you're just really religious. And if you're looking around, you'd say, well, who are these people that are going to be great in the kingdom of heaven? Well, it's all these people who follow all the commandments and teach others to do them. And then you're looking and saying, well, obviously, the people that are going to be great in the kingdom of heaven are the religious leaders. I mean, these are the people who are going to be great in the kingdom of heaven. And when you read verse 19, you say, I got it, right? No confusion here, nothing that will be misunderstood here. We know exactly. And it's also what you expect. Who are the best people most loved of God? Well, we just think about who are the best Christians out there. Like, who are the people that are just sort of doing all these great things and they're really great Christians? Those are the people that are going to be great in the kingdom of heaven. Those are our role models. Those are the people we should be like. And then Jesus immediately follows it with verse 20. For I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. And that is not what we expected to hear. Because now you start thinking, wait a minute. I was thinking of religion when Jesus is talking. All these scribes and Pharisees, religious people, they're the ones that are going to be in the kingdom of heaven. They're going to be great. And now he's saying, but wait a minute. Unless my righteousness not is as close to, unless it exceeds theirs, I will not enter the kingdom of heaven. And if I won't enter the kingdom of heaven unless my righteousness exceeds theirs, what does that mean about all those people I thought was going to be great in the kingdom of heaven? Well, their righteousness doesn't exceed their own righteousness. And so suddenly we realize that Jesus got this message here, and he's saying, look, here's what you need to do, but gosh, you got to do it better than everybody you were thinking of was really good. And suddenly, my mind is like getting blown here as I'm listening to this, thinking, wait a minute. I wanted to get into the kingdom of heaven. It sounds like a nice place. Kingdom of heaven sounds like a really nice place. I want to get there. How do I get there? Well, we know how we get there. You accumulate enough points on earth, and then you get to go to the good place, right? And as soon as you get enough points on earth and you get to go to the good place, then all is right, right? I'm in the good place. It's all great. And then Jesus is coming along and saying, you know what? That's all true. And you will never get enough points to get into the good place. You have no hope of getting enough points to get into the good place. And right then you start saying, wait a minute, this is a little bit odd. And then you start puzzling it out and you start saying, wait a minute, I wanna get into the good place. I wanna enter the kingdom of heaven. How do I do that? What's going on here? And sort of this idea gets captured in this poem by Jones Very. He's a mid-19th century poet. His name's a little odd. Jones is the first name, Very is the last name. And he writes this poem back in, it was published in 1838, 39, something like that. And the poem's titled Enoch. And as you'll remember, Enoch is the guy that's mentioned way back in Genesis 5, as he's the guy that walked with God and was not, for God took him. That's all we know about Enoch, right? He had a really good relationship with God, and then God took him, and he suddenly was not. He didn't die. And this is the poem that Jones Very writes, titled Enoch. I looked to find a man who walked with God, like the translated patriarch of old. Though gladdened millions on his footstool trod, yet none with him did such sweet converse hold. I heard the wind in low complaint go by, that none his melodies like him could hear. Day unto day spoke wisdom from on high, yet none like David turned a willing ear. God walked alone, unhonored through the earth. For him no heart-built temple open stood. The soul forgetful of her nobler birth had hewn him lofty shrines of stone and wood, and left unfinished and in ruin still the only temple he delights to fill. There's this idea. We imagine God wandering through the earth, and what does he see? He sees magnificent church structures. He sees all sorts of great things. And all he's looking for is someone like Enoch that he can just sort of talk to. Someone like David who hears the music of God and can sing it. That's what he's looking for. He's looking for people whose hearts are there, and all he's finding is this impressive, outwardly showy thing after another showy thing after another showy thing. Who then gets to enter the kingdom of heaven? And as we're reading verses 19 and 20, the answer becomes pretty clear. Nobody is that good. Literally, nobody is that good. And then we think, in our despair, does anybody get to be in the kingdom of heaven? And we suddenly remember the opening of this talk. Oh yeah, there are people who get to be in the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Who's in the kingdom of heaven? It's not all the people we imagine that are out there with all the showy good works, building the great buildings and doing all the wonderful things. The kingdom of heaven is populated by the poor in spirit, the mourners, the meek, the people hungering and thirsting for righteousness, the merciful, the pure in heart, the peacemakers. These are the people. It's the downtrodden. It's the people who are nothing. It's all just these people out there that are just sort of muddling through their lives, and there's nothing showy about them at all. But theirs is the kingdom of heaven. This is shocking in two ways, right? When we start thinking about it. The first way is this idea that it's like this, who's in there? And it's not the people who are rich in spirit, and it's not the people with all the good deeds, and it's not all these people up there that we're looking at, but it's somehow or another the lowly, the people that are just feeling like, I probably don't deserve to be in the kingdom of heaven. They're the ones God is talking to. And the other part that's really interesting about this is the kingdom of heaven. It's not the kingdom of Israel, you'll notice. Suddenly we have this idea of this kingdom, and you know, Jesus doesn't make it explicit here, but it's this idea of like, is it only the Jews that will be able to do this? And there's nothing in here that's limiting it to that. So suddenly we have this notion of this kingdom of heaven, and it's being filled with people that are broken, being filled with people that are sort of realizing, you know what? I'm just not that good, right? I'm poor in spirit. I'm not rich in spirit. I don't have all the power. I'm not one of the beautiful people. They are the people that Jesus is talking to. And this notion of making this distinction between the people with the showy acts and the people that are broken inside is exactly the only message of the entire Sermon on the Mount. And again, we miss this because we rip all the parts out. But if you read the thing as a unit, the entire thing is just an elaboration on this point, that we start here with Jesus saying, look, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. He then says, look, unless your righteousness exceeds those of the scribes and Pharisees, you'll never enter the kingdom of heaven. And then he just gives example after example after example. You think you're good because you don't murder anyone. I mean, that's great. You didn't murder anyone. Congratulations. But I tell you, don't even be angry inside. You think it's great that you're not committing adultery, but I tell you, don't even lust inside. You think it's great that you pray, but look, why are you praying? If it's all these showy outward prayers, they're not it. Chapter 6, right? He begins, beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them, for then you will have no reward from your Father who is in heaven. And it sort of goes on and on and on. Don't lay up for yourself treasures on earth, right? Over and over and over again, straight through this entire 10-minute sermon, Jesus is just saying, you think it's these outward displays that make you good. You think it's the things that people see that God is pleased with, but it's not the things that people see that please God. It's the things God sees and nobody else sees. Those are the things that please God. It's what's going on inside that pleases God. And all the showy external acts are showy external acts. As Jesus is talking and he's saying all this, you can just sort of imagine sort of what people are feeling here, a sort of this disconnect between, but wait a minute, what about all those people that look so good? And Jesus, throughout the Gospel of Matthew, is extraordinarily harsh on all the people who look so good. Matthew chapter 23, he's talking about the scribes and the Pharisees. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are like whitewashed tombs, which outwardly appear beautiful, but within are full of dead people's bones and all uncleanliness. So you also outwardly appear righteous to others, but within you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. And the passage that Denise read earlier, Paul is talking about the false prophets out there, and they look good. But that's not the issue, right? Even the demons look good. They look like angels of light. God knows what's going on inside. But the people of the area, you can imagine they're growing up in this world where they're so used to looking at all the externals, and the externals are the way they decide who's good, and then they judge everybody by the externals all the time. And you can imagine if that's what you're doing, and you know you're not one of those people that looks externally good to all the world. Nobody's ever sitting around talking about how wonderful you are and how great you are. And you'd start thinking, well, you know, they're in the kingdom of heaven. Who am I? You want the good news of the gospel here? Jesus is saying, oh, no, you guys got it all wrong. It's not those people with all the showy good works that are the people. It's not the scribes and the Pharisees that Jesus came to save. It's the people that needed a doctor that Jesus came to save. It's all the people. So if you're a person who feels broken and despairing and you sort of have this and you're poor in spirit, congratulations, you're the one Jesus is talking to. And we get this idea then, we read these stories and we see the tales of the Pharisees, and it is so easy. We read the stories to sit down and just endlessly mock the Pharisees and scribes, because Jesus is mocking the Pharisees and scribes. Sure, they look good on the outside, but we know they're terrible people inside, because Jesus knows they're terrible people inside. And one of the real temptations is to look at this sort of say, at least we've got it all right now. And unlike the people Jesus is talking to here, we know this, right? I've said nothing here that to any of you is surprising, right? We all know it's what matters in our heart. We all know that it's who we are inside that matters. So fortunately, we're not like this. We're lifting up these people with all the showy acts and so on. And we would never have these people out there that we lift up as a church. And we say, look at these amazing people out there. And then Ravi Zacharias and Jerry Falwell Jr. just become the latest examples of people running all the way back to the Pharisees, running all the way through Paul, all the way back, of people that the church builds up. And we say, look at how impressive this all is. Look at how amazing all these people are, because we judge by the outside all the time. We do it whether we like it or not. We are constantly doing it. If we start off the sermon by saying, name three great Christian leaders, you would all have names for me. You would all instantly be able to give me the names of people who are great Christians. And how do you know they're great Christians? Because they look good on paper? Because they do amazing things? You don't know their hearts. I don't know their hearts. But we do know there are firm and explicit stories here about don't judge by the externals. God is judging by the heart, but we want to judge by the externals all the time, and then we act shocked that there are demons among us that look like angels of light. Why are we surprised by this? The Pharisees were good people. They were teaching people how to be good Jews. They were teaching people the law of God. They were teaching people go to temple and really lead a good life. That's what they were doing. And they were whitewashed tombs. Paul is saying the false apostles out there are going around telling you good things. They're saying be good people, but they're false apostles and they're leading people astray. But of course, we're immune to all of this. We're totally immune to all of this. One other great example, Jones Berry, the poet I mentioned earlier, read the poem. What do you imagine about him? He wrote this great poem about God looking for people and judging people by their hearts. What kind of a person is he? And you all instantly imagined a great religious poet, right? Writing these great poems about God. He wrote that poem a month after he was released from an insane asylum. He was convinced he was the second coming. He had been teaching at Harvard, by the way, and he got fired after a lesson one day when he told the class he was infallible, and then he said to them, run to the hills, for the wrath of God is at hand. So he got fired at Harvard. He's walking around like just, he really believed he was the second coming. Put him in an insane asylum, and he writes that poem. And it's a great poem. It's really got a great message. But Jones Berry is not a great Christian guy. I mean, he's not somebody you want to emulate here in your life, but you instantly hear this and you think they must be good people, but they aren't good people. Just like I'm not a good person and you're not a good person. We are all these people. And the difference here is how we think about heaven. We think about heaven so often as it's like this meritocracy. It's like this place that if you do a bunch of really good deeds here, that's who's going to be great in heaven. And it's all about these actions. We think of the kingdom of heaven like it's like a glorified kingdom of America, right? We got this society and you rise to the top and you work hard and you do good things. And that's what the kingdom of heaven is. And it's nothing like that. I even hate to say it, right? But the kingdom of heaven isn't even like a glorified Stony Brook, right? It's nothing like this. It's got this completely different arrangement. You don't get to the kingdom of heaven because of who you are, because of who your parents were. It doesn't come through blood. It doesn't come through drugs. It comes purely by this grace of God looking out at people who are broken and saying, blessed are you when you are poor in spirit. And as we read through this description of these people that are blessed here, the poor in spirit, the mourners, the meek, those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, those who are merciful, those who are pure in heart, the peacemakers, those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. And if you wanted to write a manual for leadership, you just put a not in front of every one of those. If you want to sort of get people that'll be showy and great and be visibly good, it would be the exact opposite of every one of these categories. It's not the meek who rise to the top. And it's not the poor in spirit who rise to the top. And it's not the mourners who rise to the top. And it's not the peacemakers who rise to the top. And so we have this really odd vision here that Jesus is painting right up front, saying the kingdom of heaven is not about whether you're going to be this great leader, whether you're going to be this person that all these people follow. And why doesn't the kingdom of heaven need leaders in it? Because it has one already. And it's got the only one we need. The kingdom of heaven has the leader. And it's Christ. And if we want to enter the kingdom of heaven, the first thing we need to wrap our minds around is to be great in the kingdom of heaven is to realize I'm broken and I need Christ as the leader. Not all the other people around me, not all the Pharisees and scribes of whatever generation. I need Christ as the leader because I am poor in spirit. Let's pray. God, we thank you for the kingdom of heaven. God, we thank you that the kingdom of heaven is not something that is designed for us to enter in and run, but God, that it looks at the externals. God, we ask you to constantly remind us that the kingdom of heaven is for the broken and the downtrodden, the people who are not. And God, we stand just in complete awe of your great mercy that you let us enter into the kingdom of heaven when we realize that, and we throw ourselves at your mercy. God, teach us to do that. And God, teach us not to look around at the world and celebrate the achievements of the people in the world, but God, to look to you and celebrate what you did on the cross. In Christ's name we pray. Amen. So to close, and he opened his mouth and he taught them, saying, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. May God be with you all this week.